I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
So it wasn't all bad, but mostly it was. It felt good to be part of a club. I imagine a lot of online trolls feel this way too. So I excuse any particular egregious offensive comments about how Stephanie was fat or looked like a man in exchange for my membership. I tried to focus on the few and far between positives. When the site moderator announced they would host a meetup in New York, I decided to go. Making the leap from online to offline friendship is always risky, but with a few positive pathetic virgin encounters under my belt, I thought, what's the worst that could happen? I made the hour-long trek from Queens to a dive bar in Brooklyn, and I discovered I joined a mean girl style clique. If you've ever made a friend online, you understand the intensity of that kind of friendship. It's no less quote-unquote real than any friendship with someone you met at school or work. I assumed that my fellow PVs would be less snarky in real life and more like the kind of people I'd want to hang out with on the regular. But the whole thing felt blatantly uncool. I had assumed Stephanie would be the unspoken elephant slash beast in the room. We'd act as if we'd known each other for ages, in between knowing winks and inside jokes. Instead, they wouldn't stop talking about Stephanie. Things got even stranger when one of the moderators, let's call her XX Josie Cat XX, latched onto me as if we'd been friends forever. This wouldn't have been so strange. We'd spent years palling around online together if Josie Cat hadn't been so nasty to me in the months and years we'd spent on the site. When one of the other PVs, Pathetic Virgins, that's the name of the group, discovered my YouTube channel, Josie Cat had called me out as being just jealous of Stephanie, which I was, but so was everyone else. That was why we'd established an entire website to make fun of her. Naturally, I was a little nervous to meet Josie Cat face to face, but instead of delivering cutting insults, she wouldn't stop fawning all over me. She paraded me around the bar, asking people if they'd met me or watched my hilarious videos. Though now I'm more familiar with the ways people's personalities shift when they close their laptops and get into the real world, it felt completely bizarre and embarrassing at the time. It suddenly became very clear how much time I'd wasted with these people. Instead of working on videos or taking an acting class or doing literally anything valuable, I'd spent a significant portion of my life for the past 2 years coming up with the mean conspiracy theories about a D-list New York media celebrity who was off partying and booking gigs while I made jokes about becoming an old spinster with no one to cuddle but her cats. And I really don't like cats. Hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
And we're live on Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Ready to do some podcasting. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Just search the Blackout Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. Karen, did you say something? I'm sorry.
I said yes, sir.
Oh, okay. just leave us 5-star reviews. The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
An unofficial sport.
Bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. And today's excerpt is from, well, that escalated quickly, by Francesca Ramsey. That's one of my favorite chapters in the book. And basically talks about how she was spending time hating, and the name of the chapter is Stop Hating Start Studying, because she had joined a group. First of all, she had been a fan of this YouTuber who was just like a, you know, so New York socialite person, you know, like Instagram influencer type. Mm-hmm. And then she was a fan of her, but then the woman made a video that people didn't like, and so everyone started hating on her. And once people started hating on her, because they were, you know, they were pretty bad, some of her videos were pretty bad, like not funny, maybe even offensive. So once people started hating on her and she started feeling harassed, she shut down her comment section. Right, which is what people do, I don't know why celebrities just don't go in the comments, you know, that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. So she shut it down. These people were so dedicated to hating her, they created their own website to hate on her, which is something that, you know, I think people
they don't understand. Yeah. It's very frustrating when you're talking to people who aren't on the internet like that, or they're not on social media like that, or they are the people that are hating, or they just can't fathom it because it's not within their nature to do shit like that.
Yeah, I saw someone in the chat room say, who has time to do that? And you know what? Now, everybody.
A lot of people, baby. You would be surprised. A lot.
Like, this sounds like it was really before social media blew up when this happened and they created their own site. But now I feel like YouTube, Facebook groups, you know, a lot of people, the comment section, the forums, a lot of people's, like, I'm gonna hate on shit all day is kind of built into society, and people do bond and make friendships and shit over just the shared dislike. Those communities are real.
Yes, they are. I've seen them in real life. I've seen how they function. I've seen how they attack people. I've seen how they tear people down. You know, people even get into this when it comes to television, and I like this character, I ship these two characters and things like that. It even happened with Game of Thrones, and like it is actually deep. A lot of people actually not in that world and don't care, or because you're busy off doing your own thing, like Trey said, who the fuck got time for that? Right, if you are actually taking care of your business and taking care of things in your life, you know, you don't have time for it. But for a lot of people, they feel like, I've invested in X, Y, and Z, so since I've invested in it, I want a return on my investment. And for some people, a return on their investment is hating on it.
Yeah, I think everyone could make time for shit if they hate, you know, if what you choose to make time for.
Correct.
And I think what's interesting about this is, like you said, Game of Thrones last season is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. And it started before last season, but last Correct. Season was the ultimate bonding over shared hatred and watching people just shit on something all day. It was a pastime. It was
right,
you know, people were literally dedicating, you know, all hours of the day to going online to talk bad about that show.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm just kind of naturally a person that does not gravitate towards hate bonds. Mm-hmm. I don't
nope.
gravitate towards shared dislike bonds with people.
Nope, that's why we don't click. And a lot of times I separate myself. And the thing is, when you separate yourselves from these groups, put it like this, a lot of people, people say that children do this, but adults do this thing too. Cliques and being a part of the crowd and not being left out. Adults fall for this too. And a lot of people who actually sometimes don't even fuck about the subject goes, oh, that's what we're talking about. Oh, I want to be a part of the group and I don't want to be left out. You know, the fear of missing out and all that shit. And they end up clamming and being a part and being wrapped up in these worlds.
Well, I think for me, it's more like the bonds of an engagement that people create through the shared dislike, because mm-hmm. it's like, one, we are talking about this topic, but we are all agreeing we have to feel the same way about it, and if you don't, then we're gonna like be upset with you or not want to talk to you, and there's all that arguing and stuff like that. And it doesn't just, you know, we're using Game of Thrones right now as example, but right. it's not just that. It's Mm-mm. you know, any, there's certain people that say they hate the Kardashians, but they're always talking about the Kardashians,
right? Why, they there's know people that say about them.
There's people that say they hate certain, it happens with men in sports. You say you hate a certain player, but then you're always the one that wants to bring up that player and talk shit about that player mm-hmm. in some sport. Like it's very much a human thing. And I think the internet has allowed people to exacerbate it, because in before the internet, you would be the guy who hated James Harden, and maybe a couple other people would talk to you at the basketball court every
right.
once in a while. But now we have unfettered 24/7 access to each other, and it's never off. And it doesn't matter where you are in your world and where I am in the world.
Right.
We can join up in sharing this dislike. And so these communities that are created through, you know, people enjoying something can easily turn into the same, like this offshoot community of people who hate something, you know. And it's kind of interesting that Fran, being a person that we know has gone into, you know, was the queen of the YouTube call out, you mm-hmm. know, the person that you know had Decoded on MTV mm-hmm. that like she, you know, she's known as the person that is for this stuff. And I loved reading her book because it kind of goes into, you know, her own creation, like how she ended up being on both sides of this culture. Like the same kind of people that harassed her, she was in a group of people. Now they weren't supposed to be harassing this Stephanie woman, but still, she was in a group of people that were just negatively egging on and getting off on dunking on this woman, and created their own friendships. And I love the part where they get offline, they go, let's meet up in real life. And she has that disconnected moment of like, well, this person I know doesn't like me. But then when we're offline and in front of everybody, it's cool.
Right.
It's this is my fave, you know. So it's like I can imagine, you know, that's a weird feeling, that's a weird thing to think about. But I just thought that was very poignant and very relevant to today.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag of emotions, because the person you see online is the person you see offline. But over the years I've learned a lot of people not like that. The person you see waking up every day fucking banging and the world is gonna burn and you meet those people in real life and you go, oh, you don't have the same energy. Now I've met some that do.
Right.
Some like, yeah, I'm the same way all the time, but a high percentage don't. It's like a personality switch when they get online.
Yeah, and I think, you know, also because of the power of the internet, people get to kind of recreate and reinvent themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were the kid who got bullied in high school, here's your opportunity to recreate yourself as a person who essentially woke bullies everybody on social media. Now you know, every picture you have, you got your face beat to the gods in the right perfect angle. So just because it's all about, you know, impressing these people online. Every opinion you have is filtered and triple checked and always correct. Every news story, you're giving the perfect take and all that stuff. And it allows people to kind of have a world where you recreated yourself.
Right.
And no self can live up to these recreations. Mm-hmm. These places where we share our highs, but not often our lows.
Right.
We share our achievements, but not the reality behind those achievements. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, and the places where a momentary lapse of judgment can literally, you know, stick with you for the rest of your life. So, you know, these places aren't really real. They're like a hyper realism that I think really causes people to latch on to each other and latch on to things that may not be healthy for them. And I think that's something that, you know, like I said, I definitely had struggled with to a certain extent, but it was good reading her book because I was like, okay, so this is kind of that, the consequences of this stuff and being a analytical person, a thinking person, and going through all this stuff. And I think especially that part about the girl who really talked shit about her all for years,
mm-hmm.
months and years, literally showed up and was like, okay, here's my chance to be attached to a person that is doing things, and so now she's great. And you know what, that, you know who else she probably did that to? Stephanie, in a way.
Right.
Like, maybe not physically, maybe mm-hmm. she never met her,
right,
but that's her whole thing, is I shit on Stephanie, but also, like, when people think about Stephanie, I want her to think about me. When people think about friend, I want them to think about me, the person that paraded them around the room, this talented person, like, look at this. Even though I've been calling this person jealous and all this weird shit I would never say to their face on social media, you know, or in that case on the forum. So
yeah, and like you said, we've seen it in real life in various different ways, how a lot of people's, that's people's brand, like they shit on shit, and then, you know, eventually you catch somebody's attention with the negativity, and the thing is, a lot of it was just to get into the room and to get their attention. And then once you get into the room, a lot of times you have to change that, because they was like, hey, you know what, you're actually a part now, and we don't want you publicly shitting on shit once we bring you into our platform and all this stuff. So that means there has to be a lot of times a shift or a change, and the people that you've been shitting with, all of a sudden you've changed, you ain't the same, all of a sudden, you know, da la 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 la, yeah, because you had to change, but they don't have to.
Yep. So yeah, it's just like I said, man, it's something to think about. And it's also like a book that, you know, is kind of relevant to a lot of stuff that's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like forums and stuff was just social media before social media, you know.
It was.
So, and I think that kind of culture, that hate culture, that negative toxic culture, that let's hang around each other about reinforcing negativity constantly, it can happen with any topic. And it's not, and I think people have to consider the effects it's having on you. Cause, you know, one of the things I've noticed this year, like, I've stayed out of and away from the political debates online.
Same.
For the most part. Well, you've always done that.
Right.
I'm talking about me. So, like, I have participated in it. I don't want to erase that. Like, I have participated in it. And so for the last couple of years, I've just been like, yeah, I'm not doing it, you know. And I see my friends, quote unquote, and not unquote, you know, and real friends kind of going through it and fighting over these like every painstaking step of this process, every issue, every little detail, every candidate, every faux pas, like watching them fight over that. And I'm just, to me, I'm like, man, that's so much wasted mental energy. Mm-hmm. You're not really changing anything. Mm-hmm. You're not convincing people. The people that need to be convinced aren't listening to you, and the ones that need to listen to you won't be convinced. And you're watching the same thing happen, and there's no effect you really can have on the outcome of these things unless you're voting for in your vote, or you're organizing something offline, and even then there's a limit to that, you know. So it's been interesting to watch it from the outside looking in this year and be like, okay, like, because I just don't feel that level of involvement as far as online. Like, I have my thoughts, I think about everything, I read a lot of stuff, but and so it made me think of that too, like this idea of having to pull back and opt out. You know, when Stephanie decided to cut down her comments, that was when these motherfuckers created a whole nother group, because they needed something to hate. Right. They needed a place to hate. That goes against everything people say they're about, but that's mm-hmm. the truth. Like, mm-hmm. you couldn't hate in a place where she would see it for sure.
Right.
So you created a place where she would probably see it. Because let's be real, if someone's online and that's what they do for a living, and you create a whole fucking website to shit on them, they're probably gonna see it. Yes, someone's gonna tell them about it.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was just a really interesting read.
And also, it's one of those things for a lot of people. They think they're quote unquote above it, but this is something that can ease you. Anybody can slip into this, like literally anybody. And it doesn't have to be about YouTube. It could be literally about anything, nerd shit, comic book shit, movies, whatever it is. Everybody can actually get easily sucked into this mm-hmm. from various different ways. It could be memes. It could be a celebrity. It doesn't matter what it is. If you spend a huge chunk of your day going back and forth with people on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you have been sucked into this. A lot of times you won't consider it that, but you have been sucked into it. You have been infected by it. You have been influenced by it. We all have. But the thing is, when you're in the middle of it, in the midst of it, you get a high from it. You get a kick out of it. This is your crew. This is your group. Y'all all click. Y'all all there. You know, you're looking for this person. That person ain't online, you're gonna at them or DM them to be sure that they're online and shit like that. Like, it is really easy for everybody to get sucked into it. And the thing is, once you try to break away from the relationship, they will turn on you, because that's the part of the machine. Because the thing is, nobody wants to be the person thrown in the machine, but everybody wants to throw everybody into the machine. But when it's your turn to be on the quote unquote summer jam screen, it might be a small one, but it's a summer jam screen in your world, you know, you are impacted by it, quote unquote. It's like things change, and all of a sudden you have compassion and understanding and things like that. Yes, because like, it's human nature not to give a fuck about shit unless it directly impacts you.
Yeah, I was listening to Black Girl Nerds podcast, because it's back, I guess. And that's after, you know, Jamie, quote unquote, got canceled and, you know, had the vitriol of the entirety of Black Twitter on her and all this stuff. And I went and listened to, I can't remember the name of the episode. I think it was called something like Cancel Culture. It may have been from late last year. Forgive me for not knowing off the top of my head. But I listened to that episode particularly because I wanted to know what Jamie felt about it once she had experienced it. You know,
right.
Because I feel like a huge part of Black Girl Nerds culture before that, and I'm talking about the site,
right,
was kind of cancel culture-y. It was kind of mm-hmm. like, this isn't good enough, that's not good enough, we shouldn't see this, we shouldn't support this,
right.
We shouldn't, you know. And it was very much like a person fucked up on Twitter or something, they were talking about this person forever. They were
correct
bringing up those
they could
tweets
never do nothing right
on, yeah, like if on the Twitter kind of environment. It's one of the reasons I never really felt comfortable building communities with like quote unquote blurs, because a lot of blurred culture online is just very much like the sky is falling, everything is bad, everything is terrible, and we don't really like any fucking thing. And nope. So I didn't like that environment. I'm not knocking it, it's just not for me, and I know,
right.
I don't fit in well with it. I remember once someone added me to a blurred group or something when Twitter used to allow people to add people in these DM groups. I know you hate it, but when they used to allow people to do this, they, someone did that to me, and it was supposed to be this blurred group where we were all supposed to go in there and be like, "Ooh, this next black project is coming out," but instead it just turned into no one liked anything, you know. And I'm just not the kind of person that can get into that. I don't need to know the 25 reasons Buffy sucked, and if I, you know, and if I go, "Oh, I like Black Panther," you're gonna find a way to tell me that that was terrible. Like, okay, well, I didn't ask for this. I didn't want, you know, I don't build community like this. Mm-mm. So, but the thing that was interesting is listening to Jamie now, you know, in a way it was more mature, more wise, I guess, not mature, but more wise, because she had been on the other side of the shit, you know. And I actually like listening to people who have been on both sides of something, because I think to a certain extent there's a lesson that you can't learn until you had it done to you,
right?
And you know, like, until you've been lied on, it's hard to understand why we can't treat every single claim about somebody as true without any research, any evidence. Like, but once it happens to you, you're like, "Oh yeah, I see how you would want to have some level of like, let me look into this thing before I just start spouting off," right? Mm-hmm. Until you've been silenced by somebody, you don't really understand what it's like. You'll be asking questions like, "Well, why didn't they say something when it happened?" You know, that kind of thing. And with that cancel culture shit, until you've really been targeted by people, and it's not about being canceled. I mean, she obviously still has a podcast, Black Girl Nerd is still a website, mm-hmm. but it's about the harassment element of it that they never take into account when it's happening, when they're doing it to somebody. Mm-hmm. When you're in someone's mentions, when you're harassing somebody, when you're, you know, using the pressure of social media and stuff to like demonize people, and then going through like, "And now apologize," and then when they apologize, that's not enough, and mm-hmm. then when they work on the next project, we're bringing up the old shit. When you haven't been on that side of it, like when you're the one doing it, you think this target has no feelings, no emotions, nothing's real, and all the dopamine and retweets and shit, your shit is real, their shit is fake,
right?
And boom, you have it done to you, and everyone's calling you fake, everyone's being like, "Your shit's not real," everyone's saying you're lying. Even if you're telling the truth, they're saying you're lying. Like, that's gotta give you a perspective. And I feel like that's what Fran's chapter gives you in that part of the book, is this perspective of like, I've been on this side of this thing. I call things out. I do this. I do that. But I've also been a hater, and I've also experienced that, and that's not good either. So yeah, I just appreciated that. So.
Butterfly in the sky, I could go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow, a reading rainbow.
All right, let's get into the show. All right, all kinds of news is happening. Pop Smoke, this rapper who was 20 years old, he got killed in, I believe, like Hollywood Hills area. The police are now investigating his death, because they're saying, at first they thought it was a home invasion, but the details came out where there's like more than just him in the house. He's the only one that got killed, and then there's surveillance footage outside the house, so people think maybe it was a targeted hit on this man, you know. So although police are still investigating the shooting death of Pop Smoke, sources say the rapper himself had worries about gang members in the days prior to his death. According to TMZ, Pop was scheduled to perform at the King's Theater in Brooklyn last Sunday night. However, right before the show, he announced via Instagram that the police shut his show down. "Unfortunately, NYPD won't let me perform," his story post read. But law enforcement sources say they didn't shut the show down. Pop canceled himself. The rapper was out on bail in a federal car theft chase and was ordered, case, was ordered to stay away from gang members. Cops did admit that canceling the show was self-preservation on Pop's behalf. As previously reported, his death appears to be a targeted hit based on accounts by those who saw the surveillance footage from outside the home where Pop lived and died. Yeah, they also said, like, there's speculation that He was on Instagram and like he showed like he opened a box or some gift or something, and people saw his address that he was staying at on there, and that's how they found him. Like, there's a bunch of speculation. There's not a lot of confirmed stuff right now. But it brought me, the reason I brought it up is because I think, one, a lot of these kids are dying in this rap game right now. Like, you know, whether it's Triple X Temptation, whether it's, I can't remember, Juice WRLD, who died in the airport after ODing on drugs. Mac Miller even. Like, there's a lot of these cats going out right now, either, you know, violently and whatnot. And I think our generation, being a bit older than these kids now, has a tendency to really dismiss this shit as like, who, and all these jokes that, that black, you know, all the jokes that
you
people
know,
love to
I'm
do.
Here for the jokes, but yes, I understand.
But there's a lot of like, Pop Smoke, I never heard of him. I guess Smoke got popped, shit, you know, just stupid shit like that. And I get it that we don't know these kids, we don't know this generation, so it's easy for us to like, dismiss it. But I really think it's, one of the things that's interesting, and this is why I felt this way when Triple X Temptation died, I wasn't really trying to like just shit on him and shit on the people that were his fans and stuff, because they appeared to be kids,
right?
And when we were kids, we definitely had our problematic heroes, even shit
that we defend to today.
I was gonna say a month ago, 41-year-old Kobe Bryant died, and he was a lot of people's problematic hero, and nobody wanted to hear nothing different.
Nothing.
Right? They, like, wanted to tear Gail, King to smithereens because we don't want to hear shit about nothing other than him being a perfect man, perfect father.
Come on.
Who was framed for sexual assault and completely innocent, and there's nothing to talk about here, right? And so, but when it came to these kids and their, you know, sacred cows or whatever, we like really tore those kids down, and we you saw a lot of tearing down of those kids and the icons that they have, right? Because we don't respect them.
Right.
We don't know them. The only thing we know about them is the shit they fucked up. And the thing, that really got to me was, I put down my parents' house or whatever on Friday. I was hanging out with my niece and we was just talking in the other room. And she was talking, you know, it's that thing where, I don't know if everybody does this, but maybe it's an introvert thing, maybe it's a Libra thing, I don't know. But like, you know, my niece is a teenager now, and so, you know, teenage, you got the hormones, you got all that stuff. She already was kind of a, kind of like stoic, sarcastic, funny girl anyway. So, you know, I come in the room and I basically do this thing where I try to get on her wavelength as opposed to just forcing my way. Like most adults, I just remember when I was a kid at that age anyway, most adults seem to like come in and be like, come on over here and I'm a hug you and all this, you know, just it's like they force their way like through power personality, and they always see you as that little kid that they used to come in and be like, hug my neck and all this shit. And that's cool. I'm not saying that they don't love you or anything, but I just don't want to be that kind of uncle, that kind of adult. So I try to feel out what are you on? Like, if you just chilling in here, I'm just chilling in here. If you want to talk, I want to talk. If you don't want to talk, I don't want to talk. Like, totally cool. But we get in there and you know, we talk about just normal, you know, like she's cooking. Ask her about cooking, you know, go through school, talk about that kind of stuff. But one of the things she had said to me was, when we were sitting down, she was looking at her laptop or whatever, she was like, you heard about Pop Smoke? And I was like, yeah, I did hear about that. That's crazy. He's only like 20 years old or whatever. And she was like, I know, he can't even drink yet, he's already dead. And I was like, I know. And she was like, you know, it's just a lot of them dying with Juice WRLD, and she brought up like a few more too. And then she was also like, and with Kobe, it's like, you know, a lot of people that's trying to do good or have done good in the world is just, they being taken out and shit. You know, oh, she brought up Triple X Temptation, that's another one. And she brought up how she was fans of them. Mm-hmm. Right? And I, you know, and like I said, I have no judgment for that because I was a fan of Tupac.
And
I was a fan of Big.
Right.
Like, two people that, you know, Tupac allegedly held a woman down when she was sexually assaulted.
Right.
Big supposedly physically assaulted Lil Kim and Faith and shit. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember knowing about that shit when I was a kid, but
no.
Still,
Right.
When they died, I was not trying to hear no other stories about it. I know that much.
Come on.
And nobody else of my generation really was either.
Mm-mm.
You know, now that we're all older and shit, now we try to act like we was always this
brand
woke.
New.
Yeah, but see the Lord's Tucker wasn't out here boycotting against nobody. You know, so it just made me think about like the toll that this must be having on these kids, man, because I mean, even when we was younger and you had like, you know, Big L died, or you know, even
EZ.
When yeah, EZ died of HIV, you know, you had Pac, Big, you know, all this stuff. And yes, it's not like every rapper's dying and shit, mm-hmm. but that feeling of, you know, the people that you look up to, the people that you're entertained by, the people who are in your ears, losing those people, I think sometimes the adults, the older people get callous,
mm-hmm.
because we don't have that connection to these particular people,
right?
You know, but
and because of the disconnect, we go fuck it.
Yeah, and when you're young, man, you just not really, I'm not saying it doesn't happen or whatever, but just you're not really prepared for that, you know.
No,
I remember Kurt Cobain died, mm-hmm. like that fucked a lot of people up when we was younger.
Yeah, it did.
You know, it's like shit like that just ain't supposed to happen, you know. And so, you know, I don't like, that was the only thing, because I just, you know, I just wanted to add that to the conversation. I don't really have, I'm not trying to judge or be admonish mm-hmm. people, but it just felt like there's a lot of like, that's sad, but kind of like, these fucking kids, man, you know, as opposed to being like, you know, what about the kids that listen to them and stuff? Because look, the kids in your lives listen to this shit, you know,
right? But that's the thing, the adults are too busy trying to be like, that ain't shit, or I don't like no new music, that they are not even asking the children that they're around, or their own children, hey, did you listen? And if you do, how is this impacting you? How do you feel? Because everybody go, teenagers don't talk. Do you fucking ask them? Do you ask them?
Right. And they see the shit we say about these kids that are died, and we just dismiss and mock them and shit, man. That ain't cool. And we expected the whole world to cry for Kobe Bryant.
The like, whole world.
Like, so it just seemed wild to have that hypocritical lens on it, or stance on it. And, you know, also, like, you know, I don't know how much other people are doing this, but, like, I talked to her about music and TV and shit that she's watching and what she's listening to and stuff, and got some suggestions from her and all that stuff. And it's not unusual. I mean, I do this kind of with the kids I play ball with and stuff. And it's why I do listen to, like, you know, I'm sure Randolph Terrence, if he ever hears this, you know, he's rolling his eyes right now.
But, I know.
But this is why I listen to that shit. Like, you know, it might, like, I know there's also, like, kind of embracing being older, and because it's not like I listen to it to stay young or nothing.
Mm-mm.
But I really, I want to be able to talk to my fucking niece about this shit. You know what I mean? Like, so we're sitting there and we're talking about, like, Roddy Ricch, or, the baby and shit like that. Like, that's what's in her ears. I want to know what's in there. You know what I mean? I want to know what she thinks about that, you know. And she's a pretty smart, level-headed kid, but, you know, you never really know. And if you just ignore all this shit, you really ignoring, to a certain extent, part of your kid's world. And
yes,
I know that's a quote-unquote tradition, you know, that passed down from generation to generation, but we now have the tools to make that go away to a certain extent. Like, it's never been easier to be like, well, let me go check out this playlist, or let me go check out this artist. And listen, and for our generation especially, listen to it with a non-judgmental ear, because if you as old as us, dog, you've sang along to When I Fucked You Last Night, Baby.
Come on.
So you don't got no room to be like, I can't believe these mm-hmm. children today. Like,
you nope, don't want to hear it.
Right. So it's like, we particularly are a special generation that has the ability to connect to these kids, and who most of these kids are actually seeing as like grown-ups that, you know, do productive things, whether you're their parents, whether you're, you know, mentors, all that stuff. They're seeing like, okay, so this doesn't make me like a bad person to listen to a rapper that raps about drugs and sex and violence and shit. We came from that generation where our rappers did talk about that, but then you want to add some perspective to the world of like, hey, this isn't real, or, you know, these kids are out here some of them are out here, you know, really doing this shit. And just, you know, be careful around this, the gang culture and stuff that's within the rap, you know, because it's real. You can go to a concert and shit could get real. Speaking of which, Black Youngster is a rapper. He pulls a gun out on stage after the crowd gets heated.
Oh shit.
I guess he said, I see what y'all did to the baby and Triple X Temptation.
Like, I'm not coming up here. Yeah, people, fuck that. I will, no. What you not gonna do is get your black ass on stage.
During the club performance in South Carolina, Black Youngster flashed his gun on stage after the audience got a little heated. In a video that surfaced online, Youngster can be seen intimidating hostile individuals in the crowd in self-defense. It's not clear what led to the incident, but the rapper was allegedly berated by members of the Charleston Crips. At the Not New Hip Hop, as Not New Hip Hop pointed out via DJ on TV on Instagram. Before he pulled out his gun, he attempted to calm down the crowd. I don't know y'all, bruh. He can be heard in the video saying, I don't have no problems with y'all, bruh.
That's motherfucking warnings. People need to listen to warnings.
Down south warning.
Yeah, up north. Yeah, down south. That right there was a goddamn warning.
I don't know y'all, bruh. I don't have no problems with y'all, bruh, but we strapped. We with whatever y'all with, bruh. We don't give no fuck, bruh. Let me do my show. I'ma come outside. We're gonna deal with that. I'ma do my show. We're gonna come out and deal with y'all. As he was performing, the crowd continues to heckle the Memphis rapper. And then he's quickly handed a gun that appears to have an extended clip attached. Chaos ensues as people leave the venue while several others throw items at Youngster and his crew on stage. Oh, they really had a death wish. It's unclear what led to the altercation, but the show happened on Thursday. And so far he has not commented on the incident. Yeah, man.
Everybody ain't like
everybody on edge.
Yeah, and everybody ain't like the baby.
Well, the baby killed a man. So maybe he's like the baby. Karen.
Like they're like, hey, y'all ain't gonna be walking up on me and shit. No, we not gonna do is that bullshit.
Yeah, that will. Yeah, the baby got a body to prove it, that he ain't like that either.
Mm-mm.
Let's see what else is happening in the news, guys. Some political news, guys. Elizabeth Warren has reversed on super PAC support. That's how it has to be. Some people mad about this, by the way. Not because she reversed, but because she admonished some of the other candidates in the race and made it so that they felt the pressure to not take the super PAC money. And now they out of the race because they ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
People were pointing this out for Warren, for Harris, and forget the other one. I don't think it was Yang. I can't remember the other one, but it was like, now that these other candidates of color are out of the race, she want to turn around and take this same money. And yeah.
Right, if you want to win.
Sat right here on this air when we had Dale Covan on.
Saying it was stupid the whole time. You was like, y'all better take that motherfucking money. You have to have money.
So what, you supposed to be out of the race on your own honor? Fuck that shit. Like, the point of running is to win. And you can't, unfortunately, we don't have a system where you can win without money going into your fucking coffers, man. Like, when the money run out, you run out. That's how it goes.
Right.
So, yeah, man, she turned around and was like, yeah, I'm taking this money now. And a lot of people is kind of mad. She campaigned against money's influence in politics, said the day after her debate she would now disavow, she would not disavow a super PAC supporting her. So, Senator Elizabeth Warren is a longtime critic of the big money organization known as super PACs and of candidates who are supported by them. But she reversed course on Thursday and refused to disavow a super PAC called Persist PAC, created to support her presidential campaign. It was a change so sudden that Warren's own campaign website still said the Massachusetts senator rejects all super PACs and would disavow any super PAC form to support her in the Democratic primary. She had criticized other candidates for them as late as last week on the debate stage in New Hampshire. Warren told reporters she had called dozens of times for other candidates to agree not to accept the support of super PACs with no success. So here's where I stand. If all the candidates want to get rid of super PACs, count me in. I'll lead the charge. She told reporters at a campaign stop Thursday. But that's how it has to be. It can't be the case that a bunch of people keep them and only one or two don't.
Right.
She connected the issue directly to gender, noting that the Democratic field was stocked with male candidates who were either billionaires or backed by big money organizations. we reached a point a few weeks ago where all the men who were on the debate stage all had either super PACs or they were multi-billionaires who could rummage around in their sock drawers and find enough money to be able to fund a campaign, and the only people who didn't have them were the two women, she said. At that point, there were some women around the country who said, that's just not right. Bernie Sanders has a big money group, Our Revolution, that functions similarly to a PAC and is able to raise unlimited sums of money on his behalf. As a nonprofit, it does not have to disclose its donors, unlike super PACs. He's also supported by the country's largest nurses union, National Nurses United, whose super PAC spent $5 million backing him in 2016. So yeah, look, dog, you can either worry about looking right for these pure motherfuckers, or you can try to win.
Right.
And I guess the desperation has put her in try to win mode, which I appreciate, but it may be too late, but I hope not.
I hope not either, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I voted for her yesterday, but it might be too late, dog. Like, this... Look, I said a few weeks ago, I'm glad that she's changed off of this, because to me, the thing I like about her, she's willing to listen and change, unlike a lot of the candidates who stay stuck on shit. And I really don't have time for, like I said, the debates online and shit. I don't even like talking politics with these niggas online, because everyone's doing the same shit they always do, which is, but one time this person was like this. And it's like, dog, there's some people where that's extremely relevant, and I completely understand why you would be like, I don't trust this person. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this thing where it's like certain shit people won't be penalized for and won't stick to certain candidates. So you know when you raise that for all candidates, only certain ones are going to be hurt by it. And they're typically going to be women. They're typically going to be people of diverse ethnic backgrounds other than white men. And so the shit is going to stick to them in a way that doesn't stick to these other candidates. So that's why you're going to see women have to drop out first. You're going to see black people drop out first. You're going to see those groups be the ones to take the hit. Because they can't erase it the way whiteness erases everything. Right. Joe Biden has all these things times 10. There's a reason he ain't dropping out the race.
Mm-mm.
You know, there's a reason people keep voting for him and all this shit. Like, it's kind of ridiculous, but it is what it is. He's a white man. The shit just don't count. So, I just think it's interesting because I remember when she was running... And they were showing it like a town hall or something. And it was a viral video going around Twitter. And it was her like kind of apologizing for something to like black people for something. I was just like, if I see one more video of this woman having to apologize, what are your campaign points?
Right.
Like, cause this thing where you got to live for Twitter and all this stuff, Twitter makes you feel like and tries to make it sound like all people want from these candidates is like these very apologetic, whimpering, I'm sorry for my privilege candidates. And that may sound good on social media with a small percentage of people on social media.
But not in real life.
But when it comes to actual fucking votes, people vote for people they get fired up about. You know? And you being like, I'm sorry, that shit ain't gonna fire nobody up. So to see her make that flip, like that's, until the last like few days, that's the first I'm like, yo, I'm really excited about this candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Where was this the whole time?
Right.
Like, should have been lighting all these motherfuckers up in every debate, because I didn't know you had this in you, and it's good to see you do, and it's good to see you kind of identify with some of the things I feel about it.
Correct.
So that was one thing. Also, believe Bernie won Nevada. Or with 50% reporting, he's way in the lead. And I think that's actually kind of an inspiring story. On a couple fronts. They did vote before Elizabeth Warren. Half of them did early vote. So they saw before Elizabeth Warren's debate performance. Now maybe right. That would change some minds. I don't know. But if people felt about it the way I did, I feel like it would change some people's minds. But one of the things I thought was inspiring was that he actually got the culinary union most of the votes from there. Now the reason that's important, there's a podcast called The Daily.
Okay.
I want to say their Thursday episode of last week, which would have been like the 20th or the 20th, it's either 20th or 21st of February was the episode, and it they went down to talk about to talk to the culinary union, like heads and the members of it, about voting in the primary and who they were going to vote for in the Democratic primary. And it sounded like the story was so amazing, because what happened was the culinary union has like the best healthcare in America, like no copays, best insurance ever, right? But the way they had to get it, there was they used to have good insurance, and then this person bought the plantation or whatever that they worked on, the plant, mm-hmm. and was like, yeah, so I'm not paying for y'all's insurance no more.
Cause it's more, yeah, the company has to pay more. The better the insurance, the more the company pays.
So they went on strike. The culinary union striked for 6 years.
Yeah, they went about them games. They were like, people, the fuck is this?
People died. People had kids. Like, people, you know, all this stuff happened. And they interviewed the head of the union, and this mostly women, and very heavily Hispanic and black, you know, black and brown.
Come on.
So these women who represent this union, they fought, like you can hear the tears in their voices when they talked about that fight, that 6.5 years they didn't have, you know, that they had to strike every single day.
Right. And people talking about motherfucking fuck unions, get the fuck out of here.
Right. And so they ended up getting the health care that they want from a new person bought it, and they gave in all the demands. We're going to give you all the health care. You go to the doctor,
right.
You know, for your loved ones, all that stuff, and your family. So you would think conventionally that when Bernie comes to town, Warren comes to town, Biden comes to town, whatever, they're going to have a hard time getting these people to get excited for any of their medical plans, because essentially, unless I can keep what I have, why the fuck would I want to switch to the thing you're talking about, which is gonna ultimately cost me money or insure me less?
Right. And for most countries, they actually don't get rid of other, like, it's more than just one single payer. It's like, yeah, we have that, but then there's other options. Nobody actually just is like, oh, we just want single.
Well, Bernie is Medicare for all, right? Elizabeth Warren is like, I think, for like, give you a choice, and she has an idea how she's gonna pay for it, as always. People to Jake, no plan. Biden is like, you can keep what you have, and then also we can make Obamacare better, blah blah blah, right? I'm not knocking any of these, these are just the choices that they're presenting. I don't know what Klobuchar's is,
right.
But the thing was, they were a union that said essentially not Bernie, not even Medicare for all, because that's a step down. We want to know, can we keep our shit?
Right.
Like, we don't care if other people had an option for Medicare for all, but we would like to keep our shit because it's so good. And you know, obviously under Bernie, that can't be promised because he's trying to get everybody on one thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they also interviewed some of the workers there, and the workers were like, at first some of them would talk to the journalists and be like, yeah, you know, I'm voting for, you know, Biden, I'm voting for, you know, Warren or whatever, but nobody could say Bernie, really. And then one person said Bernie, and then they saw a woman like step to the side and talk to him from the union, and then they call him back after the primary, asked who he voted for and stuff, and he sounded a lot more cagey, sounded almost like scared to tell them what happened and stuff. And he said, I can't talk to y'all without a union representative no more. So they were like, is the union intimidating people into voting for Bernie, or intimidating them into talking about, I mean, are they intimidating them into not voting for Bernie because the union didn't come out and endorse anyone?
Right.
And everyone thought, well, they're probably gonna endorse Bernie, he's worked with unions most of, you know, he's pro-union, blah, blah blah. No, they didn't endorse anyone, right? And so they go back and talk to the union head, and she's a Latino woman, and she has, like, you know, kind of a thicker accent and stuff, but, you know, she starts talking about, like, when they didn't endorse Bernie, people were threatening them, people were calling and harassing their family members. She had screenshots of text messages sent to her daughter and stuff. And so and she's like on the verge of tears. Now, in my, I don't know this woman who did this report, so don't knock me, I'm not trying to, I don't know, so maybe I'm completely in the dark here, but it felt like she was pro Bernie, and I believe she is a woman of color, and so it sounded like in her zeal to be like, the story here is y'all are intimidating your own union into not supporting Bernie, she kind of was disregarding the fact that this woman was like, and we got harassed for not endorsing anybody. Like, you know, like, this isn't right either. And she
right,
was,
it's not.
You know, and maybe she could have, maybe it was crocodile tears, because, you know, they love to do the, like, you know, whenever someone's hurt and crying and shit, the next move has to be they don't really have real feelings. It's all fake to get us to not pay attention to.
That's a way to dismiss.
Right. Because, of course, if you're, you know, if they're standing in the way of something, they don't have feelings, right? And so she, you know, she kind of does go like, I don't know if it was real feelings or not. I don't know if she just wanted to shut down the interview or if she really just got so overwhelmed with this idea these people kind of harassing them or whatever. And she was, cause she was like, you know, as women of color, you know, we getting harassed, blah, blah, blah. And the woman interviewing was like, well, what about women of color that support Bernie? And what is that? And it's like, that's one of the problems I have with the Bernie people is that no one said you don't exist.
Right.
No one even said your opinion wasn't valid. What we're saying is people aren't lining up to go find you and harass you over this. People may even strongly disagree with you, but that's different than let me get your private phone number and text you threats. Like, it's different. And it's like that does need to be appreciated. So she's, you know, and so the woman basically stopped the interview. Anyway, I listened to that. It was a great episode. And then I saw yesterday that the vast majority of that union, or supposedly the majority of that union, voted for Bernie Sanders. And I actually think that's inspiring, because essentially what you're saying is people that have better health care than even Medicare for All were like, I'm gonna put that to the side and not think particularly just about myself, but think about other people in society, whether it's friends, whether it's whatever, like just it, people that don't have health insurance at all, people that got, you know, these huge premiums and deductibles, people that are being bankrupted by this system. No, I'm giving up what is working for me in a way that makes life much better for me.
Right.
And that to me is the true essence of what you would hope for from democracy. And if somebody like Bernie Sanders can inspire you to make that choice, I think that's admirable. You know, so I was actually, that was a story I was following that I was kind of like intrigued to see what the outcome was going to be. And it looks like he did win those votes. And like, dog, that's a hell of a fucking accomplishment.
Yeah, because that right there would be really hard for people to make that choice. Whatever the fuck I'm working for you for, your people are harassing me. Why?
Right. Someone in the chat says, it doesn't say threats work. Well, I mean, they were threatening the top of the union. If you know how unions work, there's more people in the union than the people at the top. So unless they were threatening every single person in the fucking union, that's kind of a moot point. The other thing too is, I mean, go listen to the episode. You can hear it for yourself. It sounded like the union was trying to silence people that did just want to vote for Bernie that were part of the union. And I know unions get off on unity. You know, that's supposed to be the thing, United Front. But there was this kind of like, you shut the fuck up if you're gonna bring up Bernie. And when they called that dude back, he said, I'm scared of shit. So what's the threat? Them or the people that threatened them from the Bernie camp? Like, it sounds to me like nobody should be threatening anybody.
Correct.
You know, whether it's people threatening your job, which would have a lot more fucking leverage, I think. But, you know, just in general, to me, it was kind of an inspiring story about the complicated ass mess that is this fucking primary, and that is you know, essentially people aren't like, there's a reason that he's getting the majority of these votes, you know. And I think people have to come to fucking real, like, I guess people are gonna do that kicking and streaming thing. It's just basically gonna be the opposite of 2016. It's gonna be everybody that was like, I'm for Hillary Clinton, fuck Bernie, and then all the people that's like, fuck Hillary, I'm for Bernie, and then they spent the whole rest of the fucking primary being like, and I'm never coming around, fuck him, fuck her forever, I'd rather not vote and all that shit. Mm-hmm. We're just gonna see people basically flip, because that's just how people are. Like, right. It wasn't a principled stance in 2016. It was, I feel like my person's winning. But that, to me, I meant what I said. I'll say it a million times before we get there, but yeah, whoever wins the primary got my vote. I already done voted for Elizabeth Warren, so this ain't even, like, hey guys, go out and vote for Bernie endorsing. This is just me being like, that story is fucking inspiring, because I don't believe people do things like that. Like, if you've seen humanity, people typically feel like, if I have the leverage and that leg up, I don't give.
Right.
So to see a group of people that literally are going to be hurt, essentially, individually and specifically, they will be hurt. Themselves, that one person putting that vote out there, to see those people be like, for the greater good, I would support this candidate. I think that means something, and I think you'd be a fool to ignore that shit. And that's not just all from intimidation and all that stuff, even though his fans fucking suck. So anyway, that was an interesting story. Also, Bloomberg lost ground. I said it yesterday on the feedback show, but I told you, motherfucker was in that motherfucker got in that debate stage and got pinata'd.
Was not prepared. He was not prepared. I don't know what the fuck he thought was gonna happen in there. But you can't come in there talking about money, make him dance, and it was going to be all good, my nigga.
My man got pinata'd, and I'm glad for it. You know? So, that's good news, as they say. I can't believe they changed the rules to get him in there. I'm like, you motherfuckers will be thanking them for changing the rules. You're going to thank them for this shit. Because he's exactly who you want to be in the room. Imagine if you, because the people that always do this are the Bernie fans. They're such paranoid, fucking ridiculous, you know, victims while also being the bullies at the same time, all that shit, right? But they were all like, oh, they changing the rules, they're gonna get in the room, why are you letting a billionaire on the stage, this is what's wrong with the DNC. And I was thinking, like, so your worst nightmare is the man who you claim has ranted and raved against the billionaires and millionaires and shit all his fucking career. Your worst nightmare is him being on stage with one where he can roast them infinitely? Like, wouldn't that be what the fuck you would want? And I guess maybe that fear was confirmed in a different way, which is that Elizabeth Warren is the one who had the smoke in the bars.
Yeah, she was like, bitch, I ain't got nothing to lose.
Yeah, so maybe that's how it was a better, like, maybe they felt Bernie had a poor showing compared to her. But I was like, that's what I would want. You know what I mean? It's like, yes, put this person on stage. Let this motherfucker get roasted. He don't even have the charisma of Trump to even do the I'm picking at y'all, I'm mocking y'all shit. He just got roasted, and it was great.
Yeah, like somebody said, all that money, you didn't invest any in a debate trainer?
They said they did it. They said his people invested money, and they did debate training. They said he had people do the, like, you know, the whole thing. His staffers was doing the mock position shit.
Not ready. What did he think was going to happen? He thought they wasn't going to bring this shit up?
Money, look, when you got that much money, I guess you just be like, fuck it. Like, maybe it'll work.
People be like, explain yourself. No, explain, nigga, explain.
I was watching NBA League Pass, and he has an ad for Utah. Man, it's so funny, because we've seen nothing but his ads down here in the South in North Carolina.
Right.
And so his ad for Utah made me laugh last night, because it was an ad of nothing but white people, because I guess they ain't got no black people in Utah to vote. Like, unless they were going to show, like, a black person making an NBA three-pointer, there was really nothing. It was nothing they could really appeal to the black voters.
Yeah, I forgot. We do, when you do that, you do get that local commercials there, right?
Right. It was nothing but white people. It was crazy. Trey says in Alabama, but in Alabama, is it all white people in the ad, or do y'all have some black people in it? Because in the ones he ran in North Carolina was all black. It's like the 90, okay, black ads, yeah. Utah was white ad. I didn't know this man had white ads. The people doing his ads he really should have went on stage, put a screen monitor up of his ads playing on loop, and then walked off the stage and just let that be him for the debate. Because that was a better, more effective way to get his point across than what the fuck happened.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter also suspended 70 pro Bloomberg accounts, citing platform manipulation. Supposedly, he pays people to tweet for him. Tweet positive things about him. Yep. Which is wild. He also, because Elizabeth Warren said he needed to release women from those NDAs if says that those women, you know, that he didn't do anything in those cases. She's like, why you got NDAs with women that claim sexual harassment? So, He released some women, three of them specifically, from his NDAs. Supposedly there are more than three, but there are three that he, I mean, more than three that signed them, mm-hmm. but there are three that he released.
So what you mean released? Oh, you can talk without any form of,
they can talk to the media and stuff. Yeah, some people was like, that mean he paying them off or whatever. I'm like, well, maybe those are the ones that he didn't really do shit. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. But yeah, Elizabeth Warren was like, I'll draw up the motherfucking documents for you and let you text it and sign it. Get these women out of these NDAs if you ain't do nothing wrong. Like, my God, a savage is born.
Come on.
She was so good in that debate, y'all. Y'all really, they should show debate replay on like NBA TV.
No, she's out there eat them, and she was like, gat, 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 gat. Right. I'm gonna kill you.
All right, let's see what else we got here, guys. Oh man, you guys know Real ID is coming up. The deadline is coming soon. Mm-hmm. Without a special Real ID driver's license or card, airline passengers will be required to present a passport, military ID, or global entry card to pass through security, even for domestic flights starting in October.
I got two of the three. I'm not in the military.
You got your real ID done yet?
I'm not getting a real ID. I don't have a real ID. I have a passport and I have a global. That's enough. I shouldn't have to spend money on a real ID. I don't think it's required here in North Carolina.
The nation's airports are warning of chaos for passengers if the White House doesn't postpone the looming real ID deadline. The law requires airline passengers to present a real ID compliant with driver's license or ID card at Transportation Security Administration point checkpoints in the airports as of October 1st. Those licenses require more proof of identification than regular licenses are generally marked with a star on the top. But while states have already issued 95 million real IDs, that represents just about 34% of the total, leaving two-thirds of the country with about 7 months to get them if they hope to use the license to board a plane. I can't even believe a third of the country has gotten them. Without a real ID,
because it varies from state to state. Like I said, some states actually have their own rules. They have a deadline prior to this. So for some states, they're actually pushing and forcing everybody. Like, and when it's time for renewal, they were like, "You got to get a renewal, and this is your renewal." And people are like, "The fuck is this? Now I got to go do all this work." Like I said, I do not think it's required here in North Carolina because I haven't got anything about a real ID. It might be optional. I don't know. But like I said, I have a passport and I have a global entry, so I'm not getting it unless I have to.
Okay. Without a real ID, airline passengers will be required to. Oh, I said that. And that's even on domestic flights. Airport Council International North America, which represents the nation's airports, warned that thousands of passengers could be denied boarding or left stranded.
Imagine that. You get to a destination the day before and then the day after, they like, oh, you can't go.
Yep. ACINA President and CEO Kevin Burke told NBC News that this is a crisis waiting to happen. Well, that's kind of what Trump and his administration does.
Mm-hmm. It actually started before him, but yes, this is what they do.
If the government, what, Real ID started before him?
Yes, started on George Bush.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to get better. Mm-mm. If the government doesn't make a definitive, so it started under George Bush and it's ending under Trump, damn, if they ain't motherfucking tag, if they ain't the Stockton to Malone of just...
Yeah, because this is dumbass president. The fucking after goddamn 9/11. A lot of people's like, let George Bush just do whatever the fuck he wanted to do, and this is the end result of that.
If the government doesn't make a definitive statement now that they're going to extend this, then we're going to have a real crisis on our hands first.
Yeah, he don't give a fuck.
Congress passed the Real ID law after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, mm-hmm. to create a single robust national standard for all states and territories. Across the country, motor vehicle officers have been flooded with people trying to upgrade to real IDs. Everyone's required to present four pieces of identification, including a passport or birth certificate.
Four?
A social security card or a tax return, and two documents that provide proof of residence, a mortgage and or rental receipt, and a utility bill.
What? Oh my God. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Wow, I didn't know you had to do all that bullshit.
To handle the rush, state motor vehicle officers have staffed up and are allowing people to make appointments to present their documents for review. But many states say they're overwhelmed and can't keep up. Sue Fulton, chief administrator of the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission, said demand outstrips the number of available real ID appointments. Oklahoma officials say only a handful of DMV officers will begin issuing real IDs on April 30th. The rest of the state will follow over the summer. Oregon authorities say it will take until July before they're able to issue the first new IDs. If we work 24/7, we'd have to do 7 a minute to get a number of licenses out by October, but there's no way we could do 7 a minute, said Tom Fuller. Oregon and Washington State are now urging residents to get a passport card or book, saying the process will be far quicker.
Which is still a fucking fee. It's a fee. It's a fucking fee attached to that. It's not cheap to get your passport. And I have a passport and I have the
and Nikes. Go ahead.
And I can, and I have the global ID, which is something completely, that's something completely separate.
But I mean, can you stop balling on these broke people, Karen? We get it. You got a passport and a broke and global ID. How many times you gonna tell us? Damn. We get it over here, world traveler.
It's just frustrating. Jesus, sis. No, I think because I put like this.
Because you have a passport and a global ID. You get it. You understand. I understand, Karen.
You leave me alone.
You balling on these broke bitches. We get it, Karen. You're the best. All right?
Well, you know,
but some people gotta go to the driver's license to get a real ID, Karen.
Since we talking about I'm not bragging, I mean, I can brag about that. That's something I know.
Well, we don't need you to brag about it. We get it. That we talking about serious issues for other people.
But if you would let me finish my point, sir, you have to have documents for this other shit, this quote unquote alternative. That's my thing. You have to have like all these extra documentations, which are fees
that you can afford because you already get paid fees for your passport.
Everybody can't afford it, and that's the point.
I totally understand, Bernie. I totally understand. You got it, okay? You in the summer cottage. Cool.
You listen here, Elizabeth Warren. Get out of here.
I was trying to make this about the people, and this has turned into something totally different. Let's all bow down before Karen's amazing passport and everything else.
You get out of here. You're not gonna beat me like a pinata. All I was saying is that the whole thing is some bullshit. It's all bullshit. Ain't nobody gonna be safer. You're gonna clog up the airport. It's gonna be nothing but problems and goddamn chaos.
Erykah Badu $50 Badu Pussy Premium Incense sells out in 19 minutes.
Yes, sir. That sounds about right.
Yeah, you knew it was.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for making our debut, Badussy. Sell out in a matter of 19 minutes, she said in an Instagram video. I can't believe they named it Badussy. Because if y'all don't remember, Bernie Mac coined that phrase, I believe in How to Be a Player or one of them movies, where he said, Badussy, he said it smelled like Badussy in here. I think that was Bernie Mac. And he was like, that stands for booty, dick, and pussy. And it's trying to say it, like it was supposed to not be smelling good. It's supposed to be a stinking smell. But they really named it Badussy. I'm kind of surprised but I guess if you
take it back,
you say it smelled like Badu pussy, I mean, motherfuckers gonna get it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that tells you, that's that legal crack.
Yeah, we're going to see videos and TikToks and everything when people start getting their candles.
Well, we're going to know when people get it. They're going to be coming to work in motherfucking corduroy vests, no t-shirt on, football pads, and some fucking baseball pants.
I'm not even going to be mad at them.
Rainbow tennis shoes and shit. We're going to be like, oh, man, your candle came? Okay, I'll see
good,
you, player.
Glad to see it.
You know? Oh, you done joined the Nation of Islam. Okay, cool. I know. So your candle must came in the mail. Okay, cool. Glad to see you got it. Let's see what else we can talk about. This article's wild. She wanted to have a quote unquote free birth, which I believe is when you don't have any doctors or anything involved. You just have a natural birth.
Oh, not even a whatchamacallit, a midwife?
I don't know if you have doulas and all that stuff, but we'll probably find that out in the article.
Okay.
She wanted a quote-unquote free birth with no doctors. Online groups convinced her it would be okay. Yeah.
That don't sound safe.
Well, you know, a lot of these online groups, via Facebook and shit like this, these communities, sometimes they have like a heavy anti-science, anti-doctor lean. And, when you talk about things like the, what do you call that? Vaccination, anti-vaccination movement, like that's where stuff like this can flourish. Cause it's a bunch of like-minded people feeding into folks' biases, you know, giving, you know, biased informations and shit like that, and being like, yeah, this is terrible, don't do this, don't trust them, blah, blah. And you know, enough people echoing something over and over, that's enough for people to be like, okay, yeah, this is the truth now.
Right, cause like I said, I know you probably gonna get an article, but
I am.
Even people with like, they have like midwives, the midwives actually there for a reason, and if it's something they can't handle, a lot of them be like, oh yeah, let's go to the hospital. Like, you need yeah. somebody there with some form of expertise in this.
And by, because at the end of the day, a doula, a midwife, whatever, they still care about that life of that child be coming into this world.
Like, correct.
It's not I'm doing this to spite everybody. It's mm-hmm. I'm doing this as assisting
right
into the getting this, whatever it takes to get this life into the world healthy and safe.
Right,
that's my job. Right. Not, you know, to stick it to some type of agenda.
Mm-mm.
By February 2019, Judith had become unbearably anxious. The 28-year-old Pacific Coast native's due date had come and gone, just 2 days shy of 45 weeks pregnant.
Woo!
Her belly was stretched so far that it shined. Her body was swollen and nearly everything from her toes to her hair ached. For women who have gone into labor by 42 weeks, just about every medical and birth professional recommends induction.
Right.
Who haven't gone into labor, I'm sorry. Right. A jump start to labor from medicines that ripen the cervix or contract the uterus. But Judith, an artist and free thinker who believes in all that hippie jazz, had a different kind of birth plan. One that dismissed medical recommendations and relied on nature and intuition. That rejected a sterile hospital for a warm pool in her own home. And that avoided doctors and midwives. Instead...
Oh, she avoided both.
Instead, Judith wanted to be with her only her husband and her closest friend. Ooh. A plan known as free birth, or unassisted birth, by the tiny subculture of women who practice it. Judith couldn't tell many people about that plan. Her husband was supportive, but most of her other family and friends would understandably worry. Instead, Judith, who asked that her full name not be published, spent the last several months of her pregnancy immersed in online spaces where women celebrated her decision and offered support and tips. Private Facebook groups, Instagram accounts, podcasts, and online courses had taught Judith everything she thought she needed to know about how her baby would come into the world.
Ooh, it's so much that could go wrong. From what I hear, and I've never had a child, for a lot of women, they said having a child is the closest you can get to death without dying. Like, it actually takes a lot, and it takes a lot out of your body. And it's one of those things where somebody needs to be there that has experience, particularly, I don't know if this is a first child or whatnot, but somebody, you need some form of an expert there. And the thing is, all types of shit can go wrong. The umbilical cord can wrap around the child's neck. Like, it's like, you talking about your husband, who is not a doctor and not a professional, and a friend is not a doctor and not a professional. Like, and then once children are born, tests are ran, all types of shit that's done once the child is born, and you're asking two people that don't know shit about birth to actually help you, that doesn't sound safe at all. This is like a disaster waiting to happen.
There were doubts sprouted from seeds planted by real life friends who knew about her plan and doctors whom Judith had signed up to see for state insurance benefits. But Judith had fortified herself against the creeping unease with stories she read online from free birthing mothers and real time support she received on Facebook. With a little help from algorithms and nudged increasingly questionable information and sources her way, that nudged this stuff. Yeah, cause Facebook, you know, if you're into some shit, Facebook gonna start sending you things that confirm that thing. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you talk about politics, all of a sudden you go look on the front page of Facebook, everybody's talking about politics. No, Facebook is using the algorithm to select from your friends and say, these are the one article they're sharing that are about the topics that you will click on.
Right.
And I can imagine anything obscure, Facebook can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, with a little help from the algorithms, Judith had become part of the internet's most extreme pregnancy communities. Judith, any lingering fears were wiped away the moment Judith's birth started, a month late but on its own. Judith was elated she would get to have her baby at home. After all, she told her Facebook groups the good news that she had lost her mucus plug and that contractions had started. She also asked a question: do babies get more still trying to drop down? I'm getting a couple kicks but nowhere near usual movement. Wow, she was still on Facebook while this was happening. Wow. While the group members filled her post with reassuring comments telling her to trust herself, her body, and her intuition, Judah put down her phone to do the work of birth. She walked and danced for hours through contractions and floated into a pool that her husband filled with water. She listened to music, and as a friend who was a doula massaged her back, she took minute-long naps between contractions. I'm doing this, she thought. Her body was working just as it should, as the stories she'd obsessively read promised that it would. Until it wasn't. As the pain increased and the breaks between contractions shortened, Judith tried to keep the vision of her intended birth in mind, but 10 hours into labor, things began to spin out of control.
Ooh.
She was vomiting and scared. The contractions were coming so hard and fast that she couldn't right herself before the next wave would hit. She tried to monitor the baby's heart rate, but she couldn't stay still or quiet long enough to register a read on the fetal stethoscope she'd bought. Then her waters broke, and with them came a burst of dark brown meconium, which she recognized as stool that could be dangerous to a baby if it held. Judith knew she needed help. On all fours, Judith rode in the back seat while her husband drove to a nearby hospital with a team of nurses and doctors attached to monitor to her belly, made quick preparations to deliver her baby. But as Judith rode, the wave of another contraction in the room quieted. The doctor stepped forward. There was no heartbeat. There's something different about the wail of a mother who's lost her, the wail of a mother who lost her baby, Judith said. Your whole responsibility is to protect your child, and I didn't before he even had a chance to breathe. Judith has wavy chocolate colored hair, matching almond eyes, and a mouth that naturally sits and an upturned playful smile. As she sits in her living room sofa 9 months after her loss, her freshly bitten fingernails offer a clue to the anxiety that often overwhelms her. Judith asked that NBC News not use her full name, fearing a backlash from the trolls, paid per click bloggers, and well-meaning health advocates who congregate in online spaces to debate birth choices.
Right.
Judith is terrified they'll say the things she already tells herself in the darkest moments. I can't take any more guilt, she said. Yeah, because in addition to all the people that are going to be like, this was stupid, you mother, how can you fucking do this? You know, all that, the pro-lifer people that love to admonish women, you know, like, you fucking killed a baby and shit. But you're also gonna have those people within that community who your story now contradicts all the propaganda they gave you over those months you spent with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't have what did we talk about to start the show? They can't have the narrative that fits outside of what the fuck they've been telling you.
Right.
So you stand as a beacon, as an example of like, and sometimes we don't know what the fuck we talking about.
Mm-mm.
And so you can't have that. So I can see how she would feel like every group is turning on her. It's impossible to know whether Judith's baby would have been alive if she had been induced at 42 weeks or scheduled a cesarean section or made any choices other than the ones she did. The hospital didn't perform an autopsy. The doctors couldn't explain why her baby's heart stopped beating. Even so, Judith has spent every day since replaying different scenarios, imagining a better outcome and asking herself just how she got here. As well as she can figure, it started with the podcast. Judith worked at a flower shop. The daily drive was an hour outside of town. Time she filled by listening to podcasts. When she got pregnant, she devoured episodes of The Birth Hour and Indie Birth, popular programs in which women shared their childbirth stories, which ranged from hospital to home births. But it was the Free Birth podcast that really spoke to Judith. It's a podcast for everything, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Build is a supportive space for people who are learning, exploring, and celebrating their autonomous choices in childbirth. The podcast features Emily Saldaya, 35, and a Los Angeles free birth advocate and founder of the Free Birth Society. The group has 46,000 followers on Instagram, and this podcast hit 1 million downloads last year. Wow.
Woo.
On the podcast, Saldaya interviews mothers about their free birth stories. These women reminded Judith of herself. They were college age, spiritual, creative types who spoke about their births in powerful, radical terms as euphoric events that happened in bathtubs and the nature of in their own bed, surrounded by their partners and family. Women in these podcasts weren't listening to doctors, but to their bodies. They weren't lying on their backs waiting for someone to pull a baby from them, but bringing their babies into the world with their own two hands. Judith tore through some 70 episodes. She re-listened to her favorites, one of which featured a woman who had given birth by candlelight in an off-the-grid yurt in the California mountains with only her husband and a dog she called her midwolf. While she listened, Judith would daydream, imagining herself as a future guest on a podcast. Man, people do a lot to be guests on a podcast. You gotta be careful out here, guys. Mm-hmm. I became obsessed, Judith said. I would just wonder, what's my story going to be like? And think, I want my story to be as badass as their stories. I'm glad it's good she didn't start listening to Serial. She's gonna kill somebody.
Right. Wow. Go ahead.
The podcast opened with advertisements for the Free Birth Society's paid services, online courses, and private consultations. Wanting to be prepared, she paid $299 for the group's 10-module video guide on how to free birth babies at home. The course paints expectant mothers as warriors and experts and doctors and midwives as the enemy. I don't think you heard me.
As the enemy.
The course paints expectant mothers as warriors and experts, doctors, and midwives as the enemy.
The enemy, the people that are actually here to actually save your life in case of any complications, because, you know, like, they run tests, you're constantly plugged up to shit, and even if you have a midwife, they've been doing it long enough where they could have sensed something was wrong and took you to the doc. Like, science matters, people. Science matters.
Birth is not a medical event, but a spontaneous function of biology, Free Birth Society instructor Yolande Norris Clark says in a welcome video.
What do they mean it's not a medical event?
I don't know. I guess they're saying you don't need to go to a hospital or whatever. Birth would happen whether you went there or not, and people have been doing this before hospitals existed.
Yeah, and the birth weight for mothers and children were like really, really high. A lot more women died, period, with medical technology and not. But, you know, back then, yeah, you know, one thing happened and that was it.
Free Birth, it isn't luck. Norris Clark, an artist and mother of eight in Canadian province of New Brunswick, breathily offers but education, mindset, and love of your baby that hold the keys to successful free birthing. Neither Saldaya nor Norris Clark appear to have medical experience or expertise. That is, of course, the point. They did not respond to requests for comment.
I know they did not.
But the sweeping refusal to accept any outside care during birth comes with risk. And Dr. Lawrence Lehman, a co-medical director of the mother-baby unit at the University of New Mexico Hospital, is delicate, Lehman said. You're balancing maternal autonomy about birth. On the other hand, we also know that there are serious things that can happen in pregnancy and labor that can be identified and bad outcomes prevented by having a skilled person who can recognize if things go wrong and provide care. Judith had already connected doctors to vulnerable times when she had been put under anesthesia as a child, when she sat through cold gynecological exams as a teen, and when a doctor shrugged off her inner ear pain in college. Just calculating all those experiences I've had with doctors, Judith said, I never felt heard. I never felt listened to. Judith said the podcast fanned her unease with doctors and medicine into a hot distrust. What I find interesting is that, to me, a lot of the community stuff that you're hearing, I mean, this is the same shit that works on the alt-right. Mm-hmm. Is it, like, we tend to think of it with things we don't like, right?
Right.
So in this case, this woman lost a child, so it's easy to be like, this is terrible. This mentality, this type of groupthink, this type of peer pressure and feeding into your doubts, feeding into your anxieties, this is a constant thing, even about the shit that you think is good.
Right. There are, you know, groups, just like people talk about, you know, groups that white people get together, and you have groups that are, you know, they talk about stuff similar to the KKK. There are black groups that's like the complete opposite, very militant black people, because there are groups that echo the same sentiment. And
well,
and
I mean,
one isn't healthy.
Hoteps.
Right.
Hoteps are a group of people insulated amongst themselves who keep reinforcing the same fucking bullshit over and over until it's their truth now. And that's why, you know, Kobe Bryant can die and then, you know, someone's on fucking YouTube being like, it's a conspiracy by medical marijuana and the NBA to kill this man. He was assassinated, you know. And it's like, in my mind, I look at that and go, how the fuck could anyone listen to this and arrive at this conclusion? And to the people that are in that community, it's like, how can you not?
Right, they think we're crazy,
you know. So Judas said They fanned her unease with doctors and medicine into a hot distrust, a common refrain in the free birth community in which hospital births are largely spoken about as traumatic experiences. Harried medical teams rushing, poking, strapping women down to beds and pumping them full of drugs that confuse the mind, strangle the hormones responsible for love, and push them into procedures that they didn't feel they needed. Terms like industrial obstetric tranny and rape culture are often used. While the ideas espoused by free birth may be radical, the ideology is rooted in legitimate concerns. A woman in America is 50% more likely to die from pregnancy or childbirth than her mother was. While many of these deaths are preventable and have more to do with access than improper medical care, the statistic itself can lead women to doubt medical institutions. Meanwhile, 1/3 of U.S. women give birth by C-section, a rate experts have called alarming for a procedure that can save lives but also comes with increased health risk to mothers and babies.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 in 6 women reported mistreatment, verbal abuse, threats, ignored pleas for help, violations of physical privacy, and physical abuse by healthcare providers during pregnancy and childbirth. According to a survey published last year in the Journal of Reproductive Health, women who gave birth in hospitals were more than 5 times more likely to report mistreatment than those who gave birth at home. A different survey conducted by the Washington advocacy group National Partnership for Women and Families found that in 2002, 45% of mothers surveyed agreed that giving birth is a natural process that should not be interfered with unless absolutely medically necessary. By 2018, 74% of new mothers said they agreed. So you went from 45% of women in 2002 to 74% in 2018.
What happened during that period of time?
I don't know.
Internet, yeah, you know.
Oh, groups. Damn.
Like, you have to think, yeah, because the internet was different in 2002.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I didn't even think about
that. You have to think. These groups have always been out there, but now, like everything else, you have a collection. We have groups. We have chats. We have message boards, we have websites. Like, over the years, these people with these far out there thoughts actually have, they have a voice now. And so if you are already skeptical, or you already, like she said, already had these bad experiences, it's easy to be drawn in there, and then it can you can easily be kind of become a part of this collective and not really realizing, to an extent, if you don't filter things out on your own and actually have your own thought process, it is easily, anybody can get wrapped up in shit like this. And I tell people, nobody is above this, because a lot of times people go cult-like. It's a lot of shit that is quote-unquote cult-like that we don't consider cults, but they have a cult-like mentality.
Yeah, this happened to you, I remember, with Farmville.
Yes.
I'm just joking, guys. Mothers who home birth think it's safer than a hospital, said Dr. Eugene DeClercq, a professor of community health services sciences at Boston University of Public Health. While the question of safety and risk from planned home births versus hospital births is the subject of intense professional online debate, the evidence to support both sides is limited, according to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Home births attended by midwives are rare, accounting for less than 1% of all births, and free birth is too rare a phenomenon to study. Women want the freedom to make choices without being pressured into interventions that they may not want or practices they don't feel are appropriate. Obviously, home birth folks have more control. The providers are coming into their home. The ultimate expression of what would be, no one's coming into my home. Of that would be, okay. Judith approached, as she approached her 40th week due date, her 40 week due date, she turned to Free Birth Society courses episode on long pregnancies for strength. In the video, Norris Clark warns against induction, calling any procedure to bring on labor an eviction from the womb. Norris Clark says she went far past the standard 40 week gestation for all of her births, one of them almost 43 weeks. And while she addresses the concern of stillbirth, calling it the elephant in the room, Norris Clark quickly moves on and says, the idea that babies must be born before 42 weeks is nonsense. Babies come out, babies always come out, she says, except sometimes they don't. The other thing I throw here, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about some criminal prison reform, all this type of stuff. And then, you know, I agree, you got prison abolition is what they're talking about. And I agree with so much of the points they were saying. But then you get to the end and they're like, okay, so what are the answers to the things that we're gonna make in this new world without prisons, so that we have accountability and all that stuff? And then it turns into word salad, because essentially we have to ignore a certain percentage of what is already happening.
Yes, sir.
So that we can condition you to think about just the things we want you to think about. And that's how this shit feels, where it's like, okay, but what about stillbirth? What about children that are, it's been 44 weeks and the child's not coming out? Well, I mean, first of all, it's garbage to even think that it should be, have to be before 42 weeks. Anyway, moving on. It's like, no, nigga, this is a big fucking part of this discussion.
This is the deal. This is abnormal. You can't yada yada this. Right. You
know? Like, this actually is where the fucking meat and potatoes of everything we're talking about comes down to, because in the rare instance, I'm in the rare instance. And the thing is, when you're an absolutist like this, you're afraid to say, well, in that case, you may need to go to the hospital.
Right.
Because it's like, if I admit that there's a fucking reason this place exists and that these people have jobs.
Got degrees and they studied.
Then I've lost my motherfucking leverage in my whole, like, I'm not as pure as I need to be. I need to be able to say, never, ever, ever, under any circumstance, should you ever walk into this fucking hospital for any reason. It's gonna work out. Your body will take care of it. Blah, blah, blah. If I have to step off of that even a little bit and be like, okay, well, in some cases, in the extreme case, you know, go check with a doctor. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want, and that's the thing, because they never fully explicitly come out and say, you know, whatever. They feel like, oh, I can't be held responsible. But no, you don't want to talk about this kind of case.
Right. And it's also, one of the things when you're doing the studies, how the women go, okay, I don't mind having the child at home. I don't mind a midwife. But, you know, if shit get real, yes, go to the doctor. Like their thing is, hey, if shit get real, I don't mind medical assistance.
Right. You know, it's like, I can agree with people that, hey, policing needs to be fucking abolished. Right. It's terrible, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm also like, and if a motherfucker come to kill me, am I supposed to just let them kill me? Is that the way it's gonna go? Should I kill them? You know, if they don't want to talk it out, like, what the fuck is the who in those instances? Because that's gonna happen in any fucking society. And there has to be a thing to happen at that point. It's either I'm dying or they dying or some, or the, so what is that intervention? We don't want a place where people can be surveilled. We don't want a place where people can be held. We don't want a place where people can be fucking like the intervention has to be community intervention. Motherfuckers are shooting up schools. Like, what are these answers? Cause I agree that the answers we have now are fucking trash.
Right.
I'm willing to hop on board with the thing. Just let me know what the thing is or a thing or some alternative other than just, oh, well, then, you know, motherfucker just gonna get to kill you and do whatever they want to do. They'll be out skipping down the street. You know, we'll see if they say they're sorry and then we'll move on. Like, nah, nigga. You know, so that's the thing with this too, is like, okay, so what about these scenarios? We're just gonna pretend they don't exist. Oh, okay. Then November 2018, the Free Birth Society closed its 6,000 member Facebook group in reaction to a blogger who wrote several posts about a member who had lost her baby after 6 grueling days of labor in her desert home. The story went viral when it was picked up as a feature on the Daily Beast. In her last post to the group, Saldaya doubled down on her mission. This is not the time to run, hide, or be silenced. It's time to become more steadfast, more powerful, more protected in this radical work of healing the deepest wounds on this earth.
Right, because you don't want to talk about that woman dying.
Yeah, you just double down. You're not gonna be like, okay, maybe we haven't accounted for every fucking scenario. And that's the thing, they don't want no responsibility, but they do want to be like, this is all fucked up. Okay, cool. So,
and 6 days is a long fucking ass time. Right. 6 days, my nigga.
The closing of the Free Birth Society Facebook group had no effect on Judith's confidence. She didn't recall seeing the news reports. Because if you're only in that group, you know,
yeah, they shut it down and people. They literally probably went somewhere else and kept going, probably off Facebook.
They closed the whole fucking group and she still was like, gotta go through with this. But as the days crept by, her confidence cracked. To quiet her small but growing concern, she had her amniotic fluid checked at a local hospital. Everything looked well enough, but a doctor urged her to schedule an induction. She made an appointment but canceled it the next day. Judith also checked in with a local midwifery collective, but ignored the gentle, constant advice that she induced. Oh, man, that is...
Oh,
horrific.
So they was like, hey, something not right. So, yeah, it was something in her that was like, hey... Because this is the same person was like, hey, I should get something done. And she's right. Like, nah, fuck it.
Yeah. So, Judith found a second opinion on Facebook. Although the Free Bird Society's Facebook page was had closed, several other private Free Bird Facebook groups remained that provided safe spaces for Judith to talk about her plans. Judith waited in the groups like Unassisted Pregnancy and Childbirth and Home Birth Assisted and Unassisted Uncensored as they popped into up in her recommended sidebar. Yeah. The algorithm gonna take care of you. You was already on this shit. Cool. We gonna keep you on this shit. Searching the hashtag 43 weeks pregnant led her to a Facebook group called 10 month mamas, made up of a few hundred women who knew what she was going through. 43 plus one today politely declining hospital induction. They think I'm crazy, Judith posted in 10 month mamas in January 2019, along with a list of the midwife's concerns, including the baby's larger size, her decreasing amniotic fluid, and the integrity of her placenta, the organ that carries oxygen and nutrients from mother to baby. I really feel like this baby wants a home birth too, but we are definitely being tested. What would you mamas do? The comments rolled in, more than 50 per post. Trust your body. Your body isn't your baby isn't ready to come out. I would do exactly what you're doing. Keep going, mama. Listen to your baby and your instincts. You got this.
And all they're gonna have now is, I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah. And you know what's wild is, you're not gonna have anybody in that group come out and be like, guys, I hate to disagree, but I don't think this is okay. I think she should do what the doctor said.
They would have bullied that person. Now, if somebody was like, hey, you might want to get that checked out, they'd be like, get out of here, bitch.
Right. Right. You know, this is that thing, man. This is the danger of all that shit. And this is one extreme case in a small type of community. But, nigga, how many communities are like that out here?
A lot.
It's a lot. How many of us surround ourselves with people that just double down on everything we fucking say? Yeah. Or
from vaccinations to all that shit.
Right, you know, she with the ding of each new comment came a wave of fresh relief. Last 2 weeks of her pregnancy, Judith was posting in multiple groups and reading the comments obsessively. She now recalls she replied
multiple to, groups. People do that, yes.
She replied to each new one and took screenshots of them from moms with stories of going past 43 weeks. Okay, I'm feeling shitty. I can just read this. She thought. No one in Judith's groups encouraged her to heed the midwife's advice, and for good reason. That kind of reaction was either generally discouraged or expressly against the rules. No assistance talk was the first rule of unassisted pregnancy and childbirth, which expressly forbade its 4,600 members from suggesting that another member go to it, a doctor or a midwife. This means we don't want to hear about the test your midwife wants you to take, or how your OB thinks baby is breech or too big or whatever other shit they say. Just don't. This is not the place. The rules continue. No induction discussion. We do not advocate for induction of any kind, as no induction is natural.
What? Breech birth is the real thing. What? Bitch, what?
Women can get advice on whether to see a doctor anywhere, but they go to that space specifically to not get bombarded with negative comments, Judith said. You don't want to fill your head with anything that you don't want. Social media has come under fire in recent years for amplifying extreme views and employing algorithms that connect users to these potentially dangerous echo chambers. Although much of this criticism has focused on political extremism, experts and lawmakers have also pointed out extremism fueled by health misinformation as a threat to individuals and public health at large. Yeah, this is, hey, don't get the flu shot, don't get vaccination for your kids. All these places all these people find a place online.
Yes, and this is how diseases break out. This is how people end up being sick, and then a lot of them wonder why people are like, I'm not accepted in society. No, bitch, I don't want to die over your stupidity.
Things can get a little dicey, said Kalina Kotai, a researcher at the University of Texas at Austin, who studies the social media behavior of alternative health communities. Not to demonize all of the groups, but when women start diagnosing and crowdsourcing health-related issues, they can end up getting bad medical advice that can be pretty dangerous. We're in this weird time, like a new digital Wild Wild West, she said. Yeah, and that's another thing, too, man. It's like how the joke used to be, you go to WebMD and it tells you everything gonna kill you.
Right.
You know, it's like no one's sourcing the internet information necessarily. And just as dangerous information can be out, good information can be out there, dangerous information can be out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Judah's dependence on the internet and social media through pregnancy isn't uncommon. Pregnant women and mothers of young babies were among the earliest and most active internet adopters. First-time moms are experiencing a sense of loneliness and isolation.
Yeah. Mommy blogs went crazy when the internet first. That's why you have women to today like millionaires off of their mommy blogs.
And coping with a lack of experiential knowledge that they had a generation ago, said Deborah Lupton, a digital sociologist and professor at the University of New South Wales in Australia. For Judith, newly married and living far from family and most of her friends, the online birth community stepped in to fill the gap as she veered toward the wildest, most radical content, seeking out those who would validate her choices. She blocked mainstream birth accounts on Instagram and Facebook and read only testimonials that promoted unassisted birth. Every day she felt more radical and resolved to free birth alone. I brainwashed myself with the internet.
Right, because it is a form of brainwashing. You know, I think that if she would have been around, my speculation, just my guess, she would have been more around more family. They'd have been like, if you don't get your ass in the goddamn hospital, so she'd have had somebody there would have been like, no.
Well, you notice the doubts she said she experienced were all from real life friends. People that actually give a fuck about you.
Right.
Are the ones being like, hey, Judith, you're getting a little extreme with this. And it's like, well, let me run to the internet. They'll reassure me that I'm right. And I'm bringing this article up because I feel like it applies to much more than just this.
Yes, it does.
It applies to our politics. It applies to the way we talk to each other, interact. It applies to this harassment. It applies to, all this stuff.
Yeah, it applies to anything. It can apply to religion. It can apply to activism.
Right.
It can apply to anything you can think of. It is some group out there that's just like, you're right and everybody else is wrong.
Anyone who would cause you to doubt or think beyond what we are telling you is the enemy.
Correct.
That's cult shit, but that's also very common. Like,
yes, it is.
Someone is questioning this. Fuck you. You know, get the fuck out of here. You hate us. You're the enemy. It's the Bernie Sanders people. All this shit is all related. In the end, Judith accepted medical assistance she had worked so hard to avoid. Pitocin and labor. Medicine for nausea, the epidural for the pain. Judah cried until she couldn't anymore. Her husband cried beside her. For the next 10 hours or so, she waited for her labor to progress. Judith lay in her hospital bed, getting sick, watching TV, and pushing the button that released doses of pain medication. At one point, her mind turned to Facebook groups. The women would be wondering about her. She thought she could use their support right now. Have some very bad news. We lost our baby in labor. Judith told her birth story, how her baby still inside her had died, and how she blamed herself. Not even telling my family until we deliver, say goodbye, and get out of here, she wrote. Then, woozy from drugs and numb by shock, she fell asleep. When a nurse woke Judith and told her it was time to push, she pushed. The doctor reached into Judith's body to help guide the baby out, and he was born. He weighed 10 pounds with a shock of blonde hair. Judith held her baby on her chest for a long time. He was so heavy in her arms, she thought. Not like what a newborn baby was supposed to feel like. Judith kissed him and hugged him and cried. In the photos she took with her phone, Judith's baby looks chubby, healthy, perfect, she thought. I'm so sorry, she told him over and over, and after several hours, Judith and her husband said goodbye. As Judith mourned, women from all over the world offered condolences in her Facebook groups, but not everyone was there to give support. For at least one member, Judith was to be an example. Within hours of Judith's stillbirth, a blogger in the anti-home birth Constellation published an article about it without reaching out to her. It was clear from the post, which included screenshots but blacked out Judith's name, that one of her Facebook groups had been infiltrated by an opponent of the free birth movement, someone who had seen Judith's tragedy unfold and leaked the photos of her chats. With that betrayal, Judith left all of her pregnancy Facebook groups, knowing that it was being spied on. I'll tell people, them Facebook groups are not private. There's no amount of privacy you can have.
No privacy, y'all. No privacy.
Anything you put in there, you have to assume can be seen and will be seen by other people.
Yes, sir.
You know, like, people go in the Facebook groups to talk shit about people. Mm-hmm. You go in there and it's like very like sexually explicit and stuff.
Correct.
Like, dog, it's all at your own risk. It's, you know, it's one of the reasons when we used to run the Facebook group and people were like, you know, I'm just glad y'all created a safe space. And I'd be like, I don't think this is safe. I don't think Facebook is safe.
Correct.
So it's impossible to create a space. It don't matter how many rules you have. Mm-mm. Any of this shit. Motherfucker could just be like, today's the day. I'ma be an asshole.
Yeah, I was cool. Out. Yeah. Y'all don't get along no more. I've seen it happen with my own eyes. We best friends. Now we not. It's a fuck you too. And then everything just spills out.
The internet's just not safe.
Right.
But yeah, so, I'm not surprised they leaked the photos, and I'm sure people it's funny because that, I'm sure that person would be like, this is about warning women to protect themselves and shit. It's like, yeah, you also took the worst one moment of this woman's life and callously threw it on something to make a point for the internet so that you could fucking and violate her privacy, didn't reach out to her or nothing, right? So that you could get what, some points, some clicks on your article. Like, that's fucked up too.
Correct.
Where's the empathy in what you're doing? But yeah, so she left all the groups, knowing it was getting spied on. She explained in the final post that once been an intimate and wonderful group was no longer a safe place for patients to share, for parents to share. But other free birth and long gestation, groups Judith belonged to remain. One private group with 2,000 members still uses Judith's pregnant belly and underwater photo taken at 42 weeks as its banner image.
What?
When she returned home from the hospital, Judith stayed offline and inside, afraid to run into anyone who might ask about her baby. After a few months, Judith and her husband decided they couldn't go on grieving in a small town and moved 1,200 miles to a state where she had never been and where no one knew about the baby. They found a house to rent, the ranch where they help feed and take care of horses. It's a nice place to hide, she said. Judith takes walks, feeds the horses, and writes poems and letters that she doesn't share with anyone. Art helps too. She makes dream catchers from wood and string, as well as jewelry out of polished stone. She started to sell her creations at a local art fair. It's amazing how, like, the retreat inward is really the way to get back to yourself in a lot of these cases, because mm-hmm. letting all those voices into your head and into your life
be a lot.
It seemed like this is a common pattern too,
and it's overwhelming. And a lot of times people wonder why they have anxiety, people wonder why they feel overwhelmed, people wonder why, you know, they feel unstable and stuff. A lot of it has to do with you have too many people that have access to you and your thoughts and your thought process. Sometimes you have to shut that shit down.
On Facebook, stillbirth and grieving mother support groups have replaced their free birth communities, and although Judith never got to share one of the dreamy birth tales offered up by free birth businesses and blogs, she's hoping that it's not too late for another pregnant woman to gain something from hearing her story now. Sad stories aren't out there nearly as much, she said. Maybe my extreme story could help somebody.
Yeah, and the thing is, there are a lot of other sad stories. I can't even imagine them. I brought it up in the chat. I can't even imagine how many other women lost their babies, just never came back. They just disappeared.
Just didn't even say nothing.
Right.
Brandy Zadronzi is the person who wrote this article. It's for NBC News. But yeah, I read this, and it just made me think about so much stuff about just how today, with all of this pressure online to, like, conform and all this, like, you can go out and have people that basically they just recycle your opinion back to you over and over and over and over again, and you start to feel like that's the world, and you start to feel like what I'm doing is good and healthy and normal, and I don't need, no matter how extreme it gets, no matter what, I'm in the right, all the people I know say I'm in the right, that's the end of it. And it made me think about the closing polls, you know, they do those exit polls, mm-hmm. So at the Nevada's primary, they did exit polls, and they asked what percentage of the people, you know, that voted, like, what percentage of you are on social media, on Twitter? 11%. Right. But when you're on Twitter, that's why Twitter can feel like its own world with its own rules, where everyone is one way, and where people who express opinions that are more quote unquote mainstream are normally the ones that are considered the outcasts and the bad guys, and let's all pile on them. They've just created their own illusion of reality.
Yes, they have.
That they would like, that's their utopia. That's what they would like to be. But that ain't the world. Mm-mm. And, you know, this is an extreme case of somebody kind of, the world running into a person and crushing their dreams, you know?
Yeah, and my heart goes out a lot, because it's almost like a perfect storm of things that happened. And being a mother, and I don't know if this was her first child, my assumption is this was the first
child.
Yeah. Just the pressure of being a perfect mom and having a perfect pregnancy and just doing everything right and just being just everything to everybody. You're dealing with that pressure alone by itself. Then to deal with the pressure of, you know, do I give breastfeed? Do I, you know, you just have anxiety. You're dealing with all these things, you know, and everybody's pregnancy is different. And that's very hard for women to understand. Yes, people can talk about their own personal experiences, but everybody's pregnancy is completely different. You have a very unique body. So your situation and circumstances might not be the same. That's why these groups are very dangerous, because they're actually talking about one specific woman, her experience, and your experience could be completely different. There are some women, they didn't have any labor pains. There are some women, they had to use their epidural. There are some women, they went through C-sections. You know, there are some women, they have early births. Some women have births later, but they're being monitored. Like it's not the same. And, you know, my heart goes out, because I can't even imagine you just wanting to be everything to everybody and having these outside forces of these people that actually aren't directly, you don't really have relationships with, but you think you have a relationship and bonds with based off of the internet.
Yeah, and I also want to emphasize before people write in, because I know how fucking people are with their agendas. They hear shit, it don't fit into the perfect scenario that they wanted to fit into, right. And so they think we're being like anti everything they're about. No. We know that black women suffer higher rates of mortality when it comes to giving birth. American women in general, even before you get to just race,
yes,
suffer higher rates of mortality in birth giving. Those stats that started the article are real, though.
Yes, they are.
So it's not like the distrust doesn't come from nowhere. I always say this about the hotel people. I kind of feel bad for them. It doesn't mean that I, you know, would fuck with them on any level, but I kind of feel bad for them, because essentially the American oppression of black people has given us a space in our brains to take root in these conspiracy theories, because we've had conspiracies done to us,
right?
And it's come out years later and it's like, oh, that was true. So the CIA did put crack into our community. They put cocaine into our communities to fund arms trades and shit like that. The Tuskegee experiments is real, you know, letting people live secretly without telling them, but letting them live with syphilis that could have been cured for decades until some of these people died. So these things take hold in our psyche, and then we end up being these people that are like, and that's why Kobe was killed by, you know, the, that's why he was killed by the big Nike or whatever the fuck, right? And that's the thing with this. These women found this place online because reality is scary enough. So then they went and the thing for the internet is the phrase within reason doesn't really exist on the internet. It exists in real life, right? In real life, dealing with actual human beings and scenarios, very few times is something as black and white as, and in that moment everything became, this person became this type of, they were great, all a hero or all a villain, right? No, most of the time we're like, nah, this, it reminds me of the black man who stopped the shooter in Waffle House, James something, and everybody was like, he's a hero, he got shot through the hands, da da da, and they asked him in the interview, and he's like, I was trying not to get shot. Like it was like I didn't do that. Like I didn't like run in and dive on this dude, because I was like, this motherfucker was killing people. I was trying to stop him from killing more people, you know. And I think that's the part that where it's like, he wasn't trying to be Batman, and he also wasn't, you know, necessarily being like, fuck them other people. Like, but it was just somewhere in the middle, and that's where things are, quote unquote, within reason. And I feel like the internet is very much like, fuck within reason,
right? We're black and white,
and so that's how you can have 44 weeks and people are just being like, because let me tell you something, as quote unquote real as relationships feel online, it don't take shit to just, hey guys, I'm really struggling, it's been 44 weeks, I don't know what's happening with this baby, I'm starting to feel like maybe I should go see a doctor. No girl, don't. That don't take, click, enter, send, it takes nothing. If it right. don't work out, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Right. That's my whole point. All you're going to get is, I'm fucking sorry for your loss. Like, that's all you're going to get.
Sad emoji. You know what I mean?
Right, because they have no investment in you or your child.
You know, so I'm definitely not trying to be like, don't listen to nobody, don't get no advice or what. I'm just saying, within reason, right? Like, there's
within
reason. Like, I don't, like, even in some of this, because we talk about it with vaccinations and shit, where it's like, dog, you don't have to be so anti the government or anti the doctors or anti this that you basically end up fucking yourself up and everybody else. Within reason. There's a reason that the people in your life that care about you might hip you to something differently than somebody that don't got to go to your funeral. You know what I mean? Like, so I think, and then that, and then the worst part about all of this is then she has this isolating effect afterwards, because you have to let that community go, because one, you don't fit in their story no more, you can get the fuck on.
Oh no.
And then two, they don't fit in yours, and now you don't have those bridges and those people outside of you that are your network in real life, because you spent so much time investing in this place that's not really real. You know, it's a digital place. So that's just wild to me, man. I just thought that was an interesting read, and it just made me think about all those different articles. Yeah. I mean, issues.
Right, and that's the thing. You're talking about this, but a lot of this can extend to other things. A lot of people have had fallouts online for other things, be it their political arguments online, be it, you know, social activists and stuff like that. Like, we've seen it in real life where people are big into these groups and communities. Something happens. There's a shift. There's a change. All of a sudden, there's a turn. And now you have to separate yourself from the collection of a group and community that you build. You literally have to cut them off and isolate yourself.
Yeah, and like I said, don't write up here trying to say we against free birth or we think it's okay that people die in childbirth in the hospital. We're not saying any of that shit.
No.
Even the, you know, every stat we read at the beginning, the cesarean section is having an alarming rate in America. Like, totally understand, totally get it. It's really just more sad than anything, that because it feels like maybe this was preventable, but you never know. She could have went and to the hospital and lost her child. You know, she could have died in childbirth, but
correct.
There's just something kind of sad about the idea of people that will egg you on to the edge of oblivion if it fits their agenda.
Right.
And it seems like that happens more and more.
Yes, because the thing is, the internet doesn't give a fuck about your mental state. They don't care about your spiritual state. They don't care about your emotional state. That, you know, a lot of them don't care. A lot of them is, I'm gonna use you till I can use you up, as long as you fit my agenda, whatever the agenda is. And the second you don't, you are trash, disposable, you can get the hell on. But you know what, there are real people on the other side of that get the hell on, and nobody cares until you're the one cast out the group.
Yep. All right, we talked about this long for a long period of time. I didn't mean to talk about it so long, but I didn't want to do a half-ass story on that, because I thought it was really important and relates to so many other things.
Yes.
So let's do Sword Ratchetness and wrap up. We'll do more fun stuff tomorrow.
Yes.
Sword Ratchetness time, y'all. Let's talk about the people that's out here doing stuff with these swords. A man has been jailed over sword threat bike robbery. A man who robbed a schoolboy of his bike while holding a 3-foot-long samurai sword has been jailed for 4.5 years.
Schoolboy, this is definitely not in the United States.
Jamie Wilson approached a 13-year-old in the Carlisle's Kenan Park and asked for a look at the bicycle before pulling out the sword.
Oh shit.
He was under the influence of alcohol and cocaine at the time.
Oh, both. I mean, how do you think this happened? Hey boy, let me look at that bike. I was told to say no to strangers. Oh really? Shing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I imagine, you know, I like anime. I imagine that's how your swords come out.
The 31-year-old had denied robbery and bladed article possession charges. The incident took place the 28th of August last year, and the youngster was with a friend in the Harrabee area of the city. Giving evidence, the boy, now age 14, said he'd been shocked. Asking why he let Wilson of Miller's Court Botcherby, take the bike, he added, because he had that sword. Yeah, what kind of question is that?
Right?
Fire that lawyer. That motherfucker is out of...
Terrible.
And why'd you let him take the bike? Because I don't want to fucking die. Wilson rode off in a different bicycle he had with him was taken home by the boys. So he already had a bike and took, he, I guess he just, maybe that one had baseball cards in it or something. I don't know. He's like, oh, I like these spokes. Let me get your bike. The court heard he claimed he had merely swapped bikes with the youngster at sword point. Jeff Smith defending the court, Wilson's, the court.
And this is a grown ass man. Why are you swapping bikes with a little kid?
Right. Jeff Smith defending the court. Oh wait, Jeff Smith defending told the court Wilson's life had been spiraling out of control, and that time he was in at that time he was in a very bad place.
The fuck that kid got to do with it?
White. He of was course. Also he was also sentenced for possessing cocaine and cannabis, which were found by police when he was arrested. They jailed him for 54 months. Oh man, 54 months is a long time just for pulling a sword on the kid. Good. Recorder Richard Archer said, mm-hmm. It is clear to me that it's not a shred of remorse for what put that boy and his friend through.
Right.
All right, y'all, that's it for today's episode. We appreciate y'all listening, and we'll be back later on with more episodes this week. And until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.